Welcome to The Workplace Effect, your monthly podcast where we hope to help you turn your company into a community. We'll hear from different voices and different customers every month, each adding their own insights and top tips from their field of expertise and experience to create a living manifesto that will grow with each listen, a little black book of insights for your ears to give you the ideas and tools you need to sculpt your company culture. Think of this as a handbook for your workplace. If you don't know me, I'm Lisa Wynne-Stanley, Customer Advocacy Manager here at Meta. If you know who I am, welcome back and thanks for joining us again. In this episode, we're going to be talking about emotionally intelligent management. I'm really looking forward to speaking to today's guest about this as it's such an important part of helping to cultivate a positive and productive company culture. One of our six core values here at Meta and Workplace is remembering the collective responsibility we have to each other as teammates. For us, it's about taking care of our company and each other. Emotionally intelligent management is a big part of this, so it feels natural that we should be dedicating an episode to this topic today. But it's not just important for us here at Meta and Workplace. Emotional intelligence has been shown to improve the performance of organisations more generally and make leadership more effective. So in this episode, we want to explore how we can go about building emotional intelligence into online management culture to reap these benefits. Before I introduce our guest today, why not take a moment to think about how you and your organisation perceive emotional intelligence? Maybe you understand emotional intelligence as an intangible quality that can't be taught. Maybe you've been conditioned to leave emotion out of the workplace. Or perhaps you've already recognised the importance of emotional intelligence and are trying to weave it further into everything you and your company do. Whatever viewpoint you've joined us with today, we're so pleased to have you here. And we're so excited to welcome the brilliant Daniel Goleman to The Workplace Effect today. Daniel is a renowned psychologist, consultant and leading world expert in emotional intelligence. His 1995 landmark book, Emotional Intelligence, was on the New York Times bestseller list for a year and a half, with more than 5 million copies in print worldwide in 40 languages. Daniel has since gone on to write many more books and articles, including those focusing on social intelligence and leadership, and over the years has been named one of the most influential business leaders by outlets such as the Financial Times and Wall Street Journal. So, Daniel, hello and welcome to the Workplace Effect podcast.
Well, Lisa, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here with you.
How are you today?
Oh, well, it's a lovely day here. It's cold, but sunny. That's nice.
Tell me, where are you? Where are you dialing in from?
Just north of New York City. I'm about 30 minutes up the Hudson River.
Wow. Beautiful part of the world. So excellent. So Daniel, you've been on such a journey from starting out as an academic to becoming a science journalist and best-selling author. The thread running throughout all of this is your interest in people and specifically the human mind. Could you tell us a bit about where you are on your journey now and what you're currently working on?
Well, you know, I wrote the book Emotional Intelligence 25 years ago. And when I wrote it, it was really a lot of speculation. I had bits and pieces of data and anecdotes, but I didn't really have conclusive evidence. And I'm just finishing now a look back after so many years. What's happened is there's been an explosion of research in this area. So now I can say very authoritatively, you know, this really makes a difference. It really matters. And I have lots of data to back it up. And it matters for individual performance, for engagement, for motivation, for any outcome measure you might have for an individual worker. It matters enormously for leadership. And it matters for teams. And it makes a difference for a whole organization. So I'm putting all of that together now. It's really a nice summation of a journey.
Brilliant. And I'm conscious that many of us have heard the term emotional intelligence before, but we might not all understand it in the same way. Can you tell us what you believe is sort of the best definition of emotional intelligence and what you understand it to be comprised of?
Yes, I think emotional intelligence means simply being intelligent about emotion. And there are four aspects of it. Self-awareness, do we know what we're feeling and why we're feeling it and how it helps or hurts our performance, for example, or what we're trying to do. Managing those emotions once you're aware of them. Can you keep the disruptive, upsetting emotions under some control? Not that you want to squelch them. You want to know you have them. But you don't want them to run you. And you want your positive emotions really to manifest. Your good motivation, for example. You want to be able to tune into other people's emotions, to have empathy, to know what they're feeling. People don't tell us in words what they're feeling. They tell us in tone of voice and facial expression and so on, and these nonverbal cues. Can you read those cues? Do you have cognitive empathy, knowing what the person is thinking and how they see the world? Do you have emotional empathy, sensing what that person is feeling? And finally, do you have what's called empathic concern, which is caring about that person? You want a boss who cares about you. You want a boss who has this kind of empathy.
Absolutely.
Then finally, there's putting all of that together to handle your relationships well, knowing what people are feeling and doing what's required, whatever it may be, to influence them, to inspire them, to handle the relationships in the workplace, not to mention in your life, well. Emotional intelligence helps with all of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so I'd like to take us back to the beginning. How did you first become interested in the idea of emotional intelligence? How influential were your parents in sparking your interest in the human mind? I understand your mother was a social worker and sociologist. Do you think that played a part?
I think they both did. My mother, as you said, was a community activist and social worker. She was a psychiatric, what they called a psychiatric social worker, now you'd call it a clinical social worker, which is a kind of therapist, really. So she was very interested in the human mind. But my father was too, from another angle. He was a professor of the humanities. He taught a course called Autobiography of Civilization, where he would look at world literature. And, you know, it turns out that reading great books, reading novels, helps people empathize because you see, you get a sense of another person's worldview. So I think both of them influenced me early on, rather osmotically, not saying you've got to be interested in this, but because that's what was in the air. And that led eventually into my interest in clinical psychology in graduate school. Which was the beat I covered at the New York Times for many years. And so it was my interest in emotions that got me interested in emotional intelligence.
We're thinking today specifically about emotional intelligent management. What does successful emotional intelligent management look like to you, would you say?
I'd turn the question back to listeners and say, you know, think of the worst boss you ever had or knew about. And then the best boss, the person people love to work for, the difference between them is emotional intelligence. The best one has it, the worst one lacks it.
100%. And I've worked for both of those. I think most people listening will have worked for someone who definitely doesn't have it and someone who definitely
exactly.
does.
Yeah.
It's literally like black and white, isn't it? It makes such a difference. So why is emotional intelligence important in the workplace and for leadership? You've talked a little bit about that earlier and how important it is. How would you convince business leaders it's worth dedicating time and resources to?
One reason I'm so thrilled that there's strong data in the book I'm just finishing is it's an argument for doing this in leadership development particularly. We find that, for example, it's not that easy to hire people for emotional intelligence. What's more important, we find, is helping them develop it, offering programs, helping people get coaching, whatever will boost a person's emotional intelligence. And the higher they are in the organization, the more it will matter and the better the benefit will be because they're leading people, they're influencing people, they're inspiring people or not. And how well your organization does depends on how well your leaders lead.
Absolutely. And I myself, personal experience of that, Daniel, because until I went on a leadership and management course, I didn't even know it was a thing. And I also didn't realize that at the time, I probably wasn't the best at it. But when I was made aware of it. I mean, everybody who worked for me said it literally was such a difference, and it was almost unlocking it from within myself and allowing myself to be emotionally intelligent. I think that's part of it, and it's fantastic.
I think that what you experienced, Liz, is emblematic. It's what happens when people become aware. No one will tell you in school, in business school, that this matters, but it matters enormously once you're in the field, once you're in the position, and you need to be made aware of it. And then you need to, what helps is if you're given a way to get better at it. That's what a training or development really needs to do. First, make people aware this matters. And then second, give them a way to work on themselves to get better, for example, at listening. One of the common colds of listening is cutting people off before they have a chance to say what they really want. So many leaders do this automatically. So you've got to, it takes a little mindfulness to notice, oh, I'm doing it again. And then to change, and this takes the intentional change, to change how you react, how you listen. Let the person say their piece, say back what you think you heard, and then tell them what you think. That's new learning, but it makes you a better leader.
I had to take into meetings a little note for myself that said, don't interrupt.
Well, there's actually another message in interrupting. If you're the leader of a team or the head of a meeting and you interrupt someone while they're speaking, it tells everyone else in the room you don't really care what that person is saying. It's a status statement, and it's very hurtful to the person you interrupt, but it also harms their reputation within the group. So leaders need to be more careful in how they comport themselves with other people because of the messages people are taking for how the leader acts. You know, the leader has the most influence in a small group. There is research from Yale University, for example, that shows very well that a leader's mood is contagious. People naturally pay more attention to and put more importance on what the most powerful person in that room does and says. And that means that they are sending emotions to other people, whatever it is. If they're in an upbeat mood, it's going to enhance performance because people catch that mood. If they're angry, if they're anxious, people will catch that mood. Performance will go down. So a leader's internal state as it manifests is really important for everyone else.
And so on that point, Daniel, how can we identify our own management style and understand our areas to improve on, particularly around emotional intelligence?
Well, I think it's becoming more aware of what you're expressing. And it's being called mindfulness these days. It's been around forever. It means tuning into what you're doing, what you're saying, and what you're sending. And you may notice it more in how people are receiving it. Why are people so downbeat? Or, oh, that really worked. People are feeling pretty good now, pretty exhilarated, pretty happy with what we're doing. That's a feedback mechanism for you because it may help you understand better as a leader what it is you're saying, doing, and sending.
And what effect do you think having a mainly remote or hybrid workforce is having on leaders who are developing and applying emotional intelligence?
I think that the remote workplace is upping the ante for emotional intelligence. It's making it more important. And for example, when you're on a Zoom or on a video conference with someone and you're the leader, your nonverbals matter even more than in the room. Do you look at your phone when someone's talking? That's a condemnation of that person, actually. That's how it can be taken. Do you pay full attention? Are you interested? That's quite the other message. And so I think in a virtual situation, the leader would do well to pay more attention to how the leader himself or herself is acting and to listen carefully. Because in the virtual situation, you may not have the same nonverbal cues you would in person. So you need to pay more attention to pick up what the person actually means, not just what the words say.
And for leaders who are wanting to take the first steps cultivating an emotionally intelligent management style, what would you recommend in the hybrid world of work?
Well, I think it's what I was saying. Self-awareness is the first step because that then tells you what you need to manage. And if you're not self-aware of a range of emotion, this is interesting, you can't pick up that range of emotion in other people. So developing a full awareness of your own inner world helps you sense what's going on with other people, which is essential in any situation at work, but particularly in a virtual one.
And for those who, let's say, are a bit further along in the journey, what are the things to keep in mind as they continue to build an emotionally intelligent management culture now that it's moving into a digital world of work?
Well, you know, it's interesting in the future with digitization and AI and automatization of many, many roles, everyone you're competing with is going to have the same suite of tools. What will be different is how you manage and relate to your people. It's going to be superiority in leadership and emotional intelligence, which is going to be a differentiator for companies going into the future.
And one of the integral moments in people management for businesses every year is doing annual reviews with their employees. How can leaders use emotional intelligence to improve the way they run their annual reviews now that they've likely moved online? And how can they increase the impact that these reviews have?
I am not a fan of annual reviews. I know everybody's stuck with them. Everybody hates them. I favor instead an ongoing feedback. When people do something well, let them know. When people do something not so well, let them know how they could do it better and how you might help them do it better. And make that part of your routine interactions. Don't wait for that big annual review. The other thing is, it's much better and more motivating to help people know what they've done well. Too many leaders focus only on what the person does wrong. And they don't give positive feedback. So you can start with some positive feedback, get to what the person needs to improve, but make the tone positive, not negative, because that emotional tone is what the person will take away from your encounter.
And you've already touched on this to some extent, Daniel, but what role do you see emotional intelligence having in this digital workplace of the future? How might we perceive emotion when communicating via avatars? What other social cues are important?
Well, a lot of the facial expression, you know, facial expression is one of the main ways we show emotion. There's a system called facial action coding, the facial action coding system. It's based on the work of Paul Ekman, a psychologist who studied how the more than several, you know, the several hundred facial muscles move with each emotion. It's used in cartooning. I'm sure it's being used for avatars. And it's pretty good. It will never be as good as an actual face. The digital world always flattens emotion to some extent in some way, or flattens the cues that we get for the emotion. It can be better and better and better. But I think that our emotions are our emotions. That the digital world can evoke them and can evoke them better and better, but they remain with us, not in the metaverse. And that's going to be a profound gap as the development of these technologies progresses.
How might we seek to make these emotions feel more authentic in the digital world?
I think that it will have to do with capturing nuance of voice, which is the other powerful channel for communicating emotion. So I think between facial expression and voice, improvements, which are ongoing now, as you point out, will make it more and more lifelike. Whether it will actually reach an endpoint where you can't tell the difference, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Who knows? Everything changes on a daily basis, Daniel. Exactly. I love that. You've said previously how your private life and spending time with family and friends matters increasingly more to you than your public life. How can nurturing our social connections outside of work help us at work too, would you say?
I think that if you have a satisfying private life, friends, family, and so on, you bring that satisfaction to work. It gives you a kind of inner stability. If you're having trouble in that domain, you bring that to work too. Emotions don't have a strong distinction between work and home. The brain, the heart, it reacts and it stays with us from one to the other. There's a lot of leakage both ways.
Brilliant. And you have a podcast yourself called First Person Plural, AI and Beyond, that you produce with your son, Hahnemann Goleman, and AI coach Elizabeth Solomon, where you share some fascinating insights and stories. I'd like to finish up by asking, if you would, to share with us one of those stories that's really stuck with you and what we can learn from it.
I keep coming back to something that I heard when I interviewed a friend of mine, George Kohlreiser, who teaches at IMD in Switzerland. He started his career as a psychologist who accompanied police on domestic calls. Those calls were inevitably usually a husband threatening a wife. And one call he told me about, very early on in his career with the police, the husband had taken the wife hostage and was holding a knife to her throat. And George courageously said, "Let her go, I'll be your hostage." And so the husband took him as hostage and held the knife to his throat. And George, as a psychologist, was searching frantically through his mind what he could do to change the inner state of this guy holding the knife to his throat. And he came up with a question, and the question worked. The question was, how would you like your children to remember you? That's a powerful question. And from that time on, he was able to create a relationship with the husband who had, he let the knife go. They started talking. He learned his name. He learned his past. He learned what he wanted. He had a psychologist interview. And what that tells me, and the take home, I think, for all of us, is that the relationship matters most of all.
Absolutely. And wow, what a powerful story. How switched on was he to be able to think in that moment? That's really powerful. Thank you for sharing that, Daniel. So we've been growing our Workplace Effect Manifesto over the series. Tom Gibby encouraged us to use bots in the workplace. Jane Sparrow said we should do everything we can to make other people feel valued. And Bruce Daisley reinforced that a positive work culture will thrive if there's a sense of togetherness in the workplace. So Daniel, what would you like to add?
I think it's really important for each of us to tune in to the full range of our own emotions and to empathize with the people around us, to sense what other people are feeling and act accordingly and care.
Daniel, it's been a delight having you on the Workplace Effect podcast. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing such insightful learnings with us today.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure. I loved your questions.
And thank you to all of you for listening to The Workplace Effect. We will also be hearing from one of our very valued workplace customers as they share their success story with us. You can download it wherever you get your podcast from very soon.